Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I'm joined by Graham Nichols and Mark Bentham, both pastors of Christ Church, Haywards Heath. Today we're talking all things music with our special guest, Tim Jupp. Tim has had a colourful career in the music industry, having played for almost two decades in the very successful and in many ways trailblazing Christian band Delirious, and now heads up the UK's biggest Christian music festival, Big Church Day Out.
Hello, my name is Graham Nichols.
And I'm Josh Bannister, and you're listening to Ordinary. Welcome back to the podcast. We are, again, without Mark this week, so it's another sad time for us, but we have got somebody as a replacement who I'm very excited about. We'd like to welcome Tim Jupp to the podcast. Say hi, Tim.
Hi, great to be with you. I'm a poor replacement, though.
We'll see. This is your audition for future episodes.
Okay.
Now, we're very excited to have you. I will briefly just say, for those who don't know or not familiar with Tim, Tim is a musician. He's played in a band called Delirious for many years, which we'll talk about, and is heads up an event that's close to my heart, which is Big Church Day Out, and is involved in the Christian music industry. So we're going to talk to him about his experience with Delirious and with Christian music and running a big event like that, especially given kind of the year that we've had. So, Tim, do you want to maybe just give us a brief outline of your career with Delirious to start with? Was that your first experience of like playing with a band, or were you in bands before that? Like, how did that get started?
Well, I guess if that was a proper band, it was my first experience, but I guess we've all been playing music since we were little kids. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I did a lot of children's stuff. Not many people would be old enough to remember. There was a guy called Ishmael who did kids' stuff, who I worked with when I left school for 12 years, and we did kids' music.
Okay.
And but the Delirious thing kind of started back in 92, when in our home church in Little Hampton, where I'm still at, and in fact my wife now leads that church, mm-hmm. and we started a youth worship event. And we invited all the kids from the local area, and about 60 kids turned up, and we thought revival had happened because we had about 30 in our youth group and we doubled the numbers overnight. And we thought that was amazing. And that was in 1992. And jumping forward, within 3 years' time, we were doing three of those events along the south coast in Littlehampton, Portsmouth and Southampton, and gathering more than 3,000 young people every month just to worship, really. And when I look back, it was amazing because it's obviously pre mobile phones and pre-internet. There was no promotion. It was all word of mouth. The only promotion we used to do was we'd gather every month, and at the end we'd say thanks for coming and see you next month. Mm-hmm. And people would turn up again, and it was an amazing time. And Delirious, the event was called Cutting Edge, and the Delirious band was really the house worship band for that event.
Right.
So you guys were all in the same church, and you didn't start off thinking we want to be a band in our own right. You just thought we want to arrange these worship events.
Yeah, we just loved what was going on with worship at the time and wanted to create a space. And to be honest, you know, things were very different back then. There wasn't a lot of things like that that really gave a lot of space and time and focus to worship. And we've been inspired by some great guys, some American guys, and just thought, what could it look like if we just gave more room just to worship more together and kind of just really believe, you know, God for doing some amazing stuff when people gathered. So, you know, really the kind of format of the evening was we'd talk about what song we were going to start with, and that was it. And then we'd worship for 2 hours. With no real strategy or plan, and see where we went.
So, and Tim, what songs did you sing? Sorry.
Go ahead. That's fine.
Yeah. What songs did you sing? So you chose the first song. Were you writing songs by then?
No, we were kind of covering other people's songs. There was a guy called Kevin Prosh, who at the time was part of the Vineyard movement. He was a really good friend of ours, so we did a lot of his songs because he was a mate, and we loved his songs, and they had a kind of real prophetic edge to them. And then basically we started to write songs for it. And we used to go back to my in-laws' house after the event every month and have cheese on toast. And we didn't get back there till about midnight after we packed up doing what we're doing. And we sit around the table with our cheese on toast talking about what had gone on and what we thought God was doing. And then by the next month, it was really Martin who was kind of fronting up the band, had written a song or two, which were really basically a collection of those conversations around what we thought God was doing. And he would write songs for the event. And so we just wrote songs for the event. In fact, when we recorded them, initially on cassettes, which is something which is Josh wouldn't even know what they are because he's too young to know what cassettes are. But, you know, we recorded five songs or six songs at a time as soon as we'd written them, just for the people who came to the event to take home with them, almost as a keepsake. And that was kind of the beginning of it.
So was that like the cutting edge stuff, the EPs? Were you writing songs that time that made it onto those first releases, or did they not ever come out?
It was the cutting edge stuff, because the event was called Cutting Edge, so the band didn't even really have a name. But they were songs, you know, like Did You Feel the Mountains Tremble? Mm-hmm. I Could Sing of Your Love Forever. Mm-hmm. I Found Jesus, songs like that. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a song called Revival Town, which was written about Littlehampton, because that's where we lived.
Okay. And did you... So here's a question about the sort of origins. I mean, because I'm really interested and still learning about the Christian music industry right now. And I would say in the UK, it's quite exciting to see some of the bands that are coming up and what they're doing. What was it like when you were starting? Did you have sort of contemporaries who you were modelling your band after, or did you have people that you were seeing in the industry and thinking, we could do something like this, or maybe there's a space in the market here? Did you see yourself as sort of a Christian band, or did you just see yourself as, we want to be a band and weren't so sort of going to die on a hill for the mission? Like, what was your kind of perspective on it at the start, and what was the industry like?
Yeah, well, I think we just really wanted to lead people in worship. That was our focus. It wasn't like, hey, let's be a band. It's like, you know, we were brought together to lead people in worship and out of friendship with each other. And I think what happened was there was so much passion in the young people in the worship that in the end, you're kind of like, oh, gosh, what happens with all that when these people are so excited about following Jesus? It felt like you couldn't contain it in the room. And I think for us as a band as well, we felt we couldn't contain what we were doing within that event. And the song started to travel. We kind of did it the wrong way around, really, because most bands kind of travel and tour and gig to promote their songs. But our songs kind of went before us and we followed the songs around, really. Excuse me, yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, I remember at that time buying Live in the Can, or was it Life in the Can or Live in the Can?
Yeah, that was probably, that's just a few years down the road, which was almost like a collection of what had gone on over the cutting edge years,
Yeah, but it's interesting to work out, you know, I was, I had a young family at the time, sort of, you know, junior school age family. So I was at that stage of life. Somehow it got to me. I think I was leading a youth group. So I think maybe some of the young people in the youth group were getting to know, but yeah, it wasn't like it was coming over the internet, but somehow it sort of seeped through. And then we started singing the songs pretty early on, actually, because some of those early songs, Thank You for Saving Me and so on, kind of came through quite readily to sort of normal church worship, if you like, not even sort of cutting edge churches, but anyone liked it, if you know what I mean. So it propagated somehow.
Tim, what was like, I mean, Delirious was obviously hugely successful, for anybody who hasn't heard of, but there probably isn't many people listening to the podcast who haven't heard the name Delirious. Like, the band was huge. You had a lot of opportunity to tour, I guess, and play big shows. What were some of like the highlights, just a couple of highlights from your career generally that you look back on with sort of fond memories?
Gosh, there's so many, and I think, you know, we did some huge, massive events and we did some really tiny ones. And probably so the highlights would be some of the two of those, you know, small things in little places and huge things in big places. I think when I look back, you know, I've got this old passport I got out the other day and, you know, every page is stamped multiple times all these countries you got, and you can't even imagine. I can't even imagine now that I actually did that. I think the opportunity to travel and see so much was amazing, because I think the thing with music is, and it kind of gets you into places a lot of other people can't get into. It gets definitely gets you into places that the preachers can't get into.
You know,
both in terms of spaces that are kind of just outside the church as well as in it, and you know, in terms of churchmanship, we were connecting with people from a really broad, you know, from the most crazy sort of hyper Pentecostals in South America, through to doing things with Catholics in Eastern Europe and sort of everything in between. And I think that the diversity of what we did was almost the highlight. I think that every day was such an interesting day. Yeah, I mean, there were specific things we did. You know, we did a few big things. We did a tour once with Bon Jovi, which was funny. It was one of the things that was always a story we told, but it was fun. We did a few. We did a few shows with them, and I think the fact to kind of, you know, you say we're a big band, but we're only kind of big fish in the small pond of the Christian world. And in the mainstream world, we were very small fish in that much bigger pond. But every time we stepped into that world, that was kind of exciting, because it feels, from the sort of prophetic side of stuff, you were carrying something, and you know, you had an opportunity to be a voice in a different space, really.
Yeah.
How did you guys keep yourselves spiritually alive with your own relationship with God, with your families? Because most of you were married by then, I guess.
Yeah, we're all married by then, yeah. In fact, I can remember one of the first tours we did in America, being in a bus and we were on tour with another band. In fact, the first tour we did in America actually was with Chris Tomlin. He was about 18 years old and he came out and he'd never toured and done a day outside of Texas at the time. And he toured with us for a month and opened up for us each night. And they kind of had a pastor on the road. And I remember one of their questions saying, well, why haven't you got a pastor on the road with you? And I just thought, what a ridiculous question to ask. And I remember saying, why would you want a pastor on the road? You know, because then you never need to get back home for church if you do that. I said, you know, we're local church guys. We're committed. We're part of a local family. You know, this is our job. And we've got each other, but we're not ditching local church and taking a pastor on the road. And I think, you know, getting back to what you said, Graham, it's like, I think if you marry good girls, that's a good start. But we were always definitely committed to the local church thing. But saying that, you know, probably, you know, the conversation that never ever went away in all 17 years of doing what we did was the holding intention, you know, being at home and being away thing.
Yeah.
And the fact that in a band, you know, your different personalities and everyone's got a different take on it. And, you know, do you go to the lowest common denominator of the guy who doesn't want to go away much? Or do you go with the guy in the band who just wants to be on the road every day of the year? And how do you work all that out? And I don't think we ever even stopped that conversation. But the main thing is, I think we talked a lot. We were really, really aware of all that stuff, and we were very good at chatting, and communication was good, I think.
Yeah. And so why did it come to an end?
Well, we'd done 17 years. There were a few challenges. Obviously, the economic model of being in a band had changed. So we were kind of started off in the years where we were funded by selling lots of records. So it took, you know, we could be a bit more choosy about how much we went away and where we went. And in terms of touring, you know, we were almost funded by records. And in touring, it often worked like we would go to America one weekend, earn quite a lot of money, and then the next weekend come home and go to India or something and spend all the money we earned the weekend before going to India to kind of do, so almost felt like being musical missionaries, and you'd spend it all doing that bit that didn't you know, you kind of had to pay your way to get there. Because that's what I think for us made life rich, was the, you know, diversity and the richnesses of seeing the expression of church all over the place. And we sold a lot of records, but like everything else in the music business, selling records came to an end at some point a few years back that I can't even remember what year that was. Yeah. We all kind of came to a halt, and obviously then that put on the pressure to tour more, and you're earning a living from that. And I think then those conversations that I just mentioned about going away became harder conversations in what we were doing. And I think, you know, there came a point, certainly, you know, you know, when there's five of you in a band, you don't all wake up one morning and all five of you suddenly think on that same day, oh, I think it's time to stop now. So someone makes that call and you have a conversation and time to move on. I mean, it took us a year and a half to wind the thing down because we always had contracts for gigs over a year ahead all the time. So we had to kind of fulfill those. And yeah. So it's been a while since I've been on a plane like that.
Yeah. I guess, do you miss it or no?
I really don't miss the travelling thing.
No, okay.
I love being home. You miss the moments.
Yeah.
And I think with Big Church Day Out, when you see, you know, it's a mixed feeling for me because I see these bands turn up. You know, we go and pick them up at an airport, they get out of the bus and they've got all their cases and everything, and
yeah,
and they've been travelling for sometimes 24 hours, they look a wreck, they haven't slept, they don't know even where they are, they don't know what time of day it is, they don't even know what day it is, a lot of them. And I look at them and think, gosh, I've done that for so many years and I just don't miss that one bit.
Yeah.
But then you see them later in the day and on the stage in front of people, and there's just a moment, isn't there? And you're reminded of, you know, that all the things, there's the natural side, you know, the adrenaline gets going, there's the crowds, there's those spiritual moments of connecting with people, there's the presence of God stuff, and you're suddenly like, oh, I used to really enjoy that in that way.
Do you sort of reflect on music as compared to preaching? You know, obviously my main job is preaching, and I think it's good. It's a good thing to do. But I do recognise the unique place music has in our lives, and I think always has, maybe even more so because of popular culture at the moment. Do you think that connects with people in a different way, in a positive way?
I think music does definitely can connect in a different way. Maybe in a way that the preachers should connect more in sometimes, because the music really touches that thing deep down, doesn't it? It touches that emotional thing.
Yeah.
So that, you know, and what is that? It's a really hard thing to quantify and put your finger on. And I look back at that friend I mentioned, that guy Kevin Prosh, who was a friend, and he always had this phrase that said, he says, God loves your tone, man. He says, God loves your tone. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, you know, you can get this rubbish keyboard, which you get free with a packet of cornflakes, and play a chord on it, and it does nothing. And then you can sit in a beautiful concert hall and with this amazing Steinway piano and play exactly the same notes. And one makes you cry and the other one doesn't.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, why is that? What is that thing in tone that like touches you deep down? The notes are the same, but you know, the thing that gets you. And I think, you know, so we kind of learned that from him and understood that, you know, we need to give some attention to this, all that stuff, because that's only part of the whole musical thing. It's the melodies too, isn't it? It's everything.
Yeah.
And not least of all the band thing. What I love about the band dynamic in music is it's definitely like the sum of the parts thing. So you get that dynamic. And I think as great as a preacher can be on his own, you know, and not everyone's as good as you, Graham, I'm sure in this. but you are your own man.
Graham's nodding in the background.
Yeah, and I think... Yeah. And I think... You know, I got the joy of being in a band. I wasn't the most amazing player, but some of the other guys were. But it was, regardless of how good or bad all of us were, the sum of the parts was way greater than any one of us, and that was that's an amazing thing you get in music.
Yeah, yeah, no, I can see that, and it's the beauty and the form, isn't it, that we admire. There's something, and different of us have different things we admire more, but I think it's, you know, whether it's, you know, R&B or dubstep, or whether it's I don't know, country and western, there's something that we admire about the shape and the structure and the beauty and the tone, as you were saying, and the lyrics overlaid on the top. There are things that catch our attention and get fixed in our heads in music, in a way that is remarkable. And I'm really not that good at preaching, but it's not quite the same phenomenon. You can make emotional connections if you do it well, I think. And when you preach, you're addressing the mind, but you're also trying to address the heart. I think music is a way to the heart that doesn't always address the mind. And so you have to be kind of careful with it. But if it's part of a context where there's a witness of the lyrics and the life of the band and other opportunities, then I think it's a very powerful tool. If you sort of connect it from the, I suppose, objective truths about Christ, and it's just the experience of the music, I think it becomes dangerous in a way, because it becomes unhinged from truth. But, you know, I think what you guys did and others did is, in terms of the lyrics and in terms of, I think, what you were trying to say in your lives, there was a bigger context than just the melody.
Yeah, but I think too, you know, it doesn't even need the words, does it, sometimes?
No.
And I just think music, I think you hit it on the head with, you know, it's like the word connection is the thing.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't have to connect even with the mind or the heart. I mean, there's just something in the way that God's made us as people where it can just connect with you. It can just connect with you in a way that I don't understand it. Why am I sitting here listening to this string thing playing and I'm just weeping?
Yes.
And there's no lyric, there's no, I don't even know, if there's no context for it. Is it spiritual or sacred or is there a word to it? But there's something that just moves me. Mm. And I just think that's a beautiful kind of mystery.
Mm.
I like the mysteriousness of it. You know, of how, why did God make us that way, that something like that played on an instrument can move a person like that? That's quite amazing.
Yeah, it's a bit like David and Saul, you know, where David plays his lyre or whatever.
Yeah.
old-fashioned guitar. And there's no indication, obviously David wrote loads of songs as well, but there's no indication then that he was using words. There was something soothing about the music itself.
Yeah, so I think for us in Delirious, that is kind of what we were. I would say, you know, we played in lots of, you know, we played in some, you know, pretty seedy kind of mainstream clubs, and we played in some big arenas for worship events. But the prayer before we always went on was always the same. And that was that, you know, God somehow, through the work of his Holy Spirit, would touch people through the music in that way. And I think we definitely had a belief, as crazy as it maybe was, or a faith that the music in itself would touch people. Mm. And I can remember the times of, you know, when there was no words, we would just play over people. And I can remember, you know, playing in this thing once, and this girl just leapt out of this wheelchair just in the plane. There's no words. And it's like, how do you describe, how do you explain that and describe that? And that's the wonderful thing about music that I love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, we've got about 7 minutes or so left, I think.
Yeah, I want to talk about Big Church Day Out for a few minutes,
yeah,
if
yeah.
we can.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't got that long. So do you want to give us, like, what's the point? What's Big Church Day all about? I mean, we've been there. Graham's been there. I've been there as a punter and had the joy of being able to play at it a few times now, and it's been great. But do you want to sort of give us your thoughts about why you set it up, what was the purpose of it, and what purpose you think it serves for people now?
I think there's almost like the public narrative and almost the private narrative. And leading on from what we were just chatting about, almost the private narrative for me would be, it carries the same DNA as we had in Delirious, that I really want to believe, what could it be like if we created a space that all these people could come together? And you're kind of believing in faith almost for that, that God, that Holy Spirit thing breaking out moment where the power of God could come through music alone and stuff and really impact people's lives. So I'm living for that every day, and that's the thing that carries on with Big Church Day Out, from the Delirious thing. I think more publicly, what we have a vision for is creating a space really for two things. Would be for unity, bringing the church together. And I think that was always really the message initially. What's been exciting for me is the outcomes of that have been, you know, it's just become a massive evangelistic space. So when you get the church together, when they gather, then they have fun together, and there's just something at the Big Church Day Out, you can't explain it, but it's like everybody just always walks around with a smile on their face. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, for me, I believe that even the being together can be enough in that moment. You know, we're not a teaching event, and that part of that is an intentional thing too, because we want to create a space that really can be inclusive. And as much as we value and we need teaching in our lives and the preachers and all that, it can have a tendency to create spaces that are a bit more exclusive to people, because it's like whatever you think, it'll attach some kind of theology or position to it, and it always work for some group of people, not for others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, we still have that in the music, but it's a little bit more sneakily hidden, isn't it, in verse one and verse three, and maybe sometimes in the bridge, you know, with a bit of theology, whatever. So I think for me, this thing was, no, let's just create a space, bring people together. And what I loved is, like, we were kind of 3 years into this, and we started to get loads of messages about, oh, I've just brought all my, you know, we brought people from church who, you know, never been to church before. We had a lot of letters coming in from women saying, oh, I go to church, my husband won't come, but he always comes to this. I tell him it's a music festival. Mm-hmm. And he'll come to this. And then we started, you know, beyond that, stories of people becoming Christians. And I think if that's an outcome of the church coming together, then that's great, and that's what I'm excited about.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, well, certainly we my son's family bought another family who weren't Christians last year when it was on, and they were very relaxed to be there. So it's more relaxed than they had been coming to church. And it was actually a much longer time with them because it was the whole day. So you're kind of wandering around, chatting, having coffee, going to watch another band. And so there's a relational experience that's good. And I know it's not all about this, but it is a very well-behaved, non-drug alcoholic event.
Yeah.
Which does give it an atmosphere which is very secure and very welcoming. And there's not sort of bits at the edge where you think, oh, there aren't those sort of ooh-er bits that you get at other festivals. And I think that's a witness in itself.
Yeah, and I think for us is that, you know, what I love is that opportunity. I mean, for me, even hearing that story from you right now is really encouraging, because those stories encourage. I mean, I heard for the first time last year, I heard a story of from a family who were coming down from London on the train. And then they heard someone sitting in the same carriage, you know, in front, talking about they're going to the Big Church Day Out. So they went and chatted to them, said, oh, what church do you come from? And they said, oh, well, we don't go to church. We've never been to a church. We just heard this is a great event to bring a family to. And they, so that's like the dream for me. It's like people, how does that happen where someone's never even walked through a church, comes to Big Church Day Out? And you almost want to create a space where you can just show Jesus off to people.
Yeah.
And say, look, you know, it's all us lot together. Yeah. We're all different shapes and sizes and colours and, you know, smells, whatever it is. But somehow that's the beauty, and it kind of works. That's what church is. It's everyone together. And that's where I come back to the thing is, I think the coming together in itself can be enough.
Tim, it's been so good to have you with us. Thank you for giving us your time. People, I'm assuming, can still go back and watch the Big Church Day Inn from this year that was kind of replacing the festival. That's still online, I assume?
Yeah, it's still on the Big Church Day YouTube channel. Yep.
Great. So you can go and head there and watch that, guys, and keep your eyes open for tickets for next year's event. And of course, you can still, I'm assuming, go and buy some albums of Delirious and listen to that. That's still out there. That's still serving people. I know that for sure.
You'd have to dig deep to find them.
Not too deep. Thanks so much for joining us. It's been great to talk to you.
Great. Thanks.
Hope you enjoyed that podcast. If you'd like to, subscribe or leave a rating and a review. That would really help us. And of course, share the podcast with your friends and family. And come back next week for another brand new episode of Ordinary.